Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY24 earnings call of MPS Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rahul Arora, Chairman and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning from New York, and welcome to our H1 and Q2 FY24 earnings call. Today on the call, I have with me from MPS, Sumit Malhotra, who is our CFO and joins us from Noida, India. Sukhwant Singh, Chief Operating Officer India at MPS Limited, joins us from Noida, India. Tony Al, Senior Vice President and Head of Product Management at Hi-Wire powered by MPS. He joins us from the Greater Boston area. Rajesh Jumani, who is the Chief Revenue Officer of our e-learning practice. He joins us from the DevLearn conference in Las Vegas. Today, Sumit will kick things off in our opening segment by discussing our financial performance. Then Sukhwant will update us on the developments in our content business. Rajesh will then discuss how we are expecting our e-learning business to deliver a strong H2. Tony will then discuss the exciting progress in our platform business. Finally, I will provide an update on our progress on AI/ML acquisitions, share PAT guidance for FY24 as I promised on the last call, and finally conclude with an announcement regarding dividend distribution. We will then open the call to questions. Let's get going. Over to you, Sumit.
Thanks, Rahul. MPS recorded 9.51% revenue growth over the previous year in the first half of FY24 on an FX-adjusted basis. PAT grew by as much as 27% and was at INR 60.33 crores in the first half of FY24. H1 has now laid a solid foundation for us to unlock a steeper growth trajectory in the H2 FY24. While Q2 was seasonally modest, we continue to remain bullish about the growth prospects in FY24 with a robust H2 and a meaningfully and positively different Q4. Reflecting on H1 and Q2 FY24, here are my top three favorite themes. Number one, revenue growth continues to lead to margin expansion. Number two, our platform business is building momentum every quarter, and our outlook is more optimistic rather than cautious on this business segment after a long period. Third, diversity continues to be a recurring theme for us across all key business metrics, which includes reduced customer concentration, favorable business mix, and unparalleled customer spread across markets. I want to hand it over now to Sukhwant to discuss our development in our CS business.
Thank you, Sumit. The scholarly lines of the content solution business continue to lead the charge towards revenue growth and margin expansion. In the scholarly marketplace, we have launched new capabilities linked to the Journal Editorial Office, or JEO, that are placed in a more strategic position in the value chain, which has not only resulted in new business from net new customers but also improved the stickiness and quality of our revenue with existing customers. Together with the Hi-Wire suite of products, this new JEO service compounds our capabilities and positions us as probably the only vendor partner with technical and domain expertise at the front end of the scholarly publishing value chain. Additionally, our star account strategy in the scholarly market is yielding excellent results, and we are hoping to scale the strategy to other business segments too. The education side of our content solution business had a seasonally modest Q2, which is expected to correct itself in the second half of the year and particularly in quarter four. As a result, the revenue growth in content solution in the first half of FY24 was contained at 7.7%, but I continue to remain bullish about content solution in FY24 with a robust second half ahead of us. I want to hand it over now to Rajesh to discuss how we are expecting our e-learning business to deliver a strong H2. Over to you, Rajesh.
Thank you, Sukhwant. E-learning continues as the second largest business segment. FX adjusted revenues were INR 65 crores in the first half of FY24, amounting to 25% of our total revenue. While the India entity, which is the largest in our portfolio, had a seasonally modest Q2, our outlook on the business for the rest of FY24 continues to be bullish. All critical lead indicators for revenue, including order book and high probability deal pipeline, are appearing positive. We are hoping to announce a large experience center project in the coming months. The e-learning operations in Europe are doing much better than expected, particularly in the challenging macroeconomic environment. TopSim revenue grew by 15.6% in Q2 of FY24 compared to the same period last year. And though margins were suppressed in the same comparison, the team did better given the current situation in Europe. On a half-yearly basis, TopSim revenue grew by 21% compared to the same period last year. NPS Europa is performing exceptionally well. Revenue grew by 50.5% in Q2 of FY24 compared to the same period last year at a PBT margin of 22.7% in Q2 of FY24. We also have a more diversified customer base and a healthier pipeline, thus indicating that the current performance is sustainable. The acquisition of Liberate Learning has been successful. After the flurry of integration activity in the first 4 weeks, Rod and his team are steering the business independently. The marketplace has reacted favorably to the development, and we are gaining momentum in the APAC region. In H1 and Q2 of FY24, a consolidation of Liberate Learning's revenue and earnings were restricted to 1 month. I will now hand it over to Tony, who will discuss the exciting new phase of growth and expansion our platform business has entered. Over to you, Tony.
Thank you very much, Raj. MPS's platform business, marketed as Highwire, has entered an exciting new phase. On the back of double-digit revenue growth for the first time since the acquisition of Highwire in the first quarter of 2020, the platform business did well in Q2 FY24. Revenue grew 7% on an FX-adjusted basis in Q2 FY24 over the previous year. Since the operating leverage in the platform business is the highest across all of our segments, PBT grew even faster at approximately 55% in Q2 FY24 compared to last year. Overall, on a half-year basis, revenue in the platform business grew by 10% in the first half over the previous year, and PBT grew by 54% in the first half over the previous year. Execution of our product roadmaps was on schedule for the entire platform suite in Q2 FY24, and the marketplace has responded well to those new features and functions. There are several monetization opportunities as we implement new clients and migrate some existing clients to newer products. We have 2 product launches planned in the business segment and are confident that these will create new revenue streams in the longer term for MPS. Earlier this month, we launched DigiCore Pro. This is an end-to-end publishing workflow solution based on the principles of single-source publishing, a methodology that reduces inefficiencies and increases the speed of delivery for our clients. This new publishing system supports content authoring, online submission, editorial and peer review tracking, interactive peer review, post-acceptance production tracking, and delivery to hosting platforms. This new workflow product will open up opportunities to engage and bring on new customers who are looking to move to a more modern workflow system. It provides opportunities to bundle products and services, serving as an on-ramp to sell content services and other technology solutions to those clients. And it allows us to sunset older workflow solutions, creating efficiencies internally. Next month, we're launching Think 365, the cloud-based version of our Think e-commerce and subscription management system. Think 365 is a software-as-a-service model and a modernization of the current desktop version. This means that clients will benefit from the convenience and the efficiencies that a SaaS system offers, such as less IT and system administration, automatic upgrades, and an improved user experience. We believe that this compelling option will be well received and that Think clients will be eager to upgrade to this improved service. To conclude my remarks on the platform business, I'd like to highlight our mission has now transitioned from support and delivery to product development. This includes new product launches, active product roadmaps, and upgrades. Our new customer acquisition strategy that involves product and service bundling, for example, with DigiCore Pro, and our price warriorship is gaining traction and helping us to develop a new customer base. The feedback from the industry and the scholarly community is highly encouraging. Highwire and MPS now stands as the only serious independent choice since two of our larger competitors have been acquired by publishers. Our agreement with our core customers has significantly improved in the platform business with discussions underway on cross-selling. We also have a robust pipeline of RFPs with new customers. Overall, the platform business has progressed from consolidation to a growth phase. Back to you, Rahul.
Thanks, Tony, and thank you, team, for that comprehensive update. I will start now with an update on our progress as MPS Labs in AI/ML, since that continues to be top of mind in the industry and the marketplace at large. The advances in AI/ML have a proposed impact on the entire ecosystem, affecting our customers, competitors, industry, and the macroeconomic environment alike. Instead of perceiving it as a threat, we're viewing it as an opportunity to differentiate ourselves once again in a market that's highly fragmented and ripe for consolidation. To spearhead this transformation, we earlier had launched a new initiative called MPS Labs, which is pioneering our AI/ML initiative. Is headquartered in Bangalore and has a team of over 100 professionals with relevant expertise. We have made substantive progress this past quarter. Our teams have played a pivotal role in scaling up AI/ML application in content profiling, workflow routing, and the typesetting and composition of standard layout products. Our pilot in collaboration with our customers, leveraging AI/ML in the creation of alt text to make content accessible, have now transitioned into real projects and real workflows. With MPS Labs as our innovation hub, we are driven to continuously push the boundaries of unlocking AI/ML within our capability set, ultimately enhancing our offering and cementing a leadership position in the market. Now moving on to acquisitions, dividend distribution, and PAT guidance. As I've shared earlier this year, we expect to close one more acquisition in FY24, potentially related to our platform business. I would like to confirm that we are now pursuing acquisitions of healthy, at least 15% EBITDA businesses that are also growing, at least a 10% revenue CAGR over a three-year period. On capital allocation, as I've shared previously as well, our priority is always to redistribute surplus funds to shareholders of MPS, provided there is no imminent use of funds over the next 6 to 12 months. This approach allows us to be focused, disciplined, and responsible. At this point, we believe that even after concluding the upcoming transaction, MPS will be sitting on surplus funds. And therefore, the Board of Directors has recommended an interim dividend of INR 30 per equity share of INR 10 each of the company. For future acquisitions in FY25, as I had mentioned previously, we are comfortable raising debt to the level of our PAT, which, as you know, is also growing. Based on the strong foundation laid in H1, our management team feels comfortable sharing that we are moving towards achieving above 130 crores in PAT in FY24. Let us now open the call to questions.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Mr. Keshav Garg from Countercyclic PMS. Please go ahead, sir.
Sir, I'm trying to understand that, sir, for the second quarter, except for our platform division, both our other divisions have shown a degrowth in absolute profit number year on year. So what's the reason for the same, and is this trend expected to continue or expected to reverse going forward?
Yeah, so we've, like in the opening remarks, Sukwant and Jumani both shared that, you know, in certain lines of our business, we've had a soft Q2. Having said that, we are expecting a pretty significant ramp up in Q3 and Q4. Some of the margin erosion is a result of costs that we are investing in, things that we're investing in to deliver on the Q3 and Q4 numbers. So sometimes, you know, when you're expecting large projects, you have to onboard headcount and invest in those projects before the project begins. So some of the margin erosion is because of that upfront investment for future growth. In terms of, you know, revenue, I think, like I said, you know, Q2 was seasonally modest. You know, last year, Q1 was seasonally modest. So every year, we seem to have one quarter where, you know, we don't form a uniform pattern. But, you know, I always judge the business on a yearly basis rather than looking at minor movements on a quarterly basis. So, like I shared at the top of the call, we are very comfortable, you know, reporting that, confirming that we will cross 130 crores in PAT in FY24. You may note that we, as a management team, we have always been extremely conservative with forward-looking guidance. The last time I offered this type of guidance was last year when I shared that we will achieve a PAT of 100 crores, and we went ahead and achieved 109. So we typically are very conservative with our guidance, and on a conservative basis, we're sharing that we will cross 130 crores in PAT in FY24.
So that's really great. Sir, just one more thing about the acquisition of this Liberte Group. Sir, prima facie looks very attractively priced. So thank you very much for that. So, but we still have to buy the 35% minority interest. So what exactly is the pricing arrangement for acquiring the remaining stake? Sir, is it that we will have to cough up a significant number of, a significant amount, or is it in line with the acquisition of 65% only?
Yeah, so overall, this particular quarter and the first half, the consolidation of Liberte Learnings has only been 1 month. Even within that 1 month, though, they have delivered over 35% EBITDA margin and also grown over the previous year as well, although we didn't own the company the previous year. And on terms of the step up, we have acquired 65%. We plan to acquire the balance 35% over a 2 to 5 year period. Now, all future payments are linked to how the business grows and at what level the business grows. But from a range perspective, you know, we expect the payout of the 35% to be in the 4x to 7x range of EBITDA earnings for that particular year. So, as you know, MPS obviously is operating at a higher multiple. So we believe that it will be accretive to the current setup, whether it's 4x or 7x will be determined by how much the business is growing, and we've given pretty significant growth milestones for the management team there.
Great, sir. So thank you very much and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phones. The next question is from the line of Mr. Madhur Rathi from Counter Investments. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, when I look at the number of employees that have increased in our content solution and platform business, sir, the number of employees have increased at a much higher rate than our first half revenue. So if you could just help me explain, because Last quarter, we had guided that we'll be using tools of automation or ChatGPT, and that will help us like increase our revenue at a faster rate. So if you could just help me understand this.
Yeah, so just a quick answer is hiring is, new employee hiring is leading. Revenue is lagging. So essentially we're expecting a very strong H2 and to make sure that it's a sustainable level of growth and we over-deliver on customer expectations. We've invested to make sure that new revenue transition, onboarding of new customers, onboarding of new process, goes without, you know, any disruption and customers gain confidence in MPS. So, we continue to automate. MPS is the leading vendor partner in the marketplace when it comes to automation and leveraging, you know, on system based delivery to unlock efficiencies. So what you're seeing here is, hiring is leading, revenue is lagging, and Q3, Q4, those numbers will start to make sense again.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mr. Rishikesh Kale, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. You actually, sir, the question was answered when you gave a guidance. So reasonably, we would expect that since you always are very conservative, can we expect around 140 to 150, 45 crore PAT this year?
Thanks, Rishikesh. I know you always push me in this direction. Like I said, you know, we are a conservative management team. We are not conservative in our approach. We're not conservative in our process. We're extremely aggressive when it comes to our work and you know, our pursuit of excellence. But in we are conservative in how we communicate our success and communicate our vision. So we like to stick with the conservative communication of that we will cross 130 crores in PAT. But of course, the team is an aggressive team, a competitive team, and we will be pursuing to maximize. We will not limit ourselves to any ceiling. So this 130 is not a ceiling. It is simply a number that we're sharing that we feel that we will comfortably achieve without a sweat. And of course, you are more than welcome to do your independent analysis based on our past track record and our, you know, how we've shared guidance previously, and extrapolate what that could potentially look like. But at this point, we would like to stick with the guidance of 130 crores.
Sure, thank you. And one more follow-up question. You said about an upcoming acquisition. We have right about almost like 160 crores cash, and you said that it is more than enough to basically carry us through and fund the future acquisitions as well. So with this dividend, we would probably go below our benchmark of 150 crore holding of cash for a short period.
I think it'll be for a short period of time because, you know, so we anticipate, and I can share that as well, we anticipate the new acquisition to be somewhere in the 50 to 70 crore range, you know, that's still ongoing. But, you know, that we also don't see the point in just sitting on cash and not doing anything with it, you know, because first it's a distraction. That's not our core competence. Managing cash and treasury and, you know, non-operating investments is not our core competency. And plus, you know, the business is also generating cash on a monthly basis. So if we, you know, if we're able to complete this acquisition this year, there'll probably be at least a 6-month gap, for the next one. And, you know, in that 6-month gap, or potentially more, we will be generating more cash, and you know, debt is an option. So we feel very comfortable that, you know, then for a very short period of time, we will go below 100 possibly on our cash in the business, and I think that's good as well because you know, I am slightly dissatisfied with how we are, you know, creating cash today in the business. We historically used to generate cash much faster, and I think it'll be good pressure on the team to get back to those old levels. It's definitely we've implemented several initiatives, process change, system change, communication change, delegation of authority. We've rolled out a lot of new things in the last 6 months so that we can step up the pace when it comes to cash generation in the second half of the year and for the foreseeable future. So feeling quite comfortable even if the cash levels go below 100 crores for, you know, a couple of months.
Okay, and thanks for the great transparency and great corporate governance. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Darshil from Crown Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening, sir. Thank you so much for taking my question, sir, and congratulations on the great set of results. So most of my questions have been answered. So just two questions, sir. One, do we see any risk in, you know, maybe meeting our guidance, like some macro factor or some economic factor that, you know, can be a hindrance to us? That's number one. And what kind of growth with the new acquisition that we've done can we think for FY25? Any guidance in terms of revenue or, you know, PAT growth that you could like to give? Those are the questions. So, thank you.
Sure. Thank you for that question. So I think, you know, I'd also like to use the previous question as well. I think I missed the thought there. So overall, I think the guidance is conservative. We are not, at the end of the day, we've had an opportunity to look at the first two quarters. And we are basically, if you think about it, giving a guidance for the next 6 months. Not even 6 months, because October is gone. So it's essentially five. We're giving you a five-month guidance. So, you know, I do not anticipate any macroeconomic or any industry headwind or anything like that playing out in the next 5 months. And that's one of the reasons why we typically give this guidance at the end of the second quarter, because we've had, you know, 6 months of historical published financials, but we also have another month, 2 months of Q3 as well. So we're able to give a very conservative, tight guidance. So I do not expect any hindrance to the guidance. And assuming that we do perform the way I'm describing, there will probably be another round of distribution that will take place to the shareholders in May when we announce our final FY24 results. That's the thought that I did not unlock in the previous question. So what we're distributing today is merely an interim dividend. There will be a final distribution as well. On FY25 guidance, you know, like I shared, you know, we are extremely aggressive in our approach, you know, and how we pursue our goals. We're a competitive team, but we are highly conservative when it comes to communicating our success as well as communicating our, you know, our goals. And that's just, you know, we're a humble team and we want to keep it that way. From a guidance perspective, I have shared Vision 2027, which basically means that we want to get to a certain level of revenue and profit by FY 28. We expect, you know, the growth, the CAGR to be around 25% between now and FY 28. So in that CAGR, 60% of the growth is going to come from acquisitions, 40% of it is going to come from organic growth. So 500 to 900. Organically, 900 to 1,500 inorganically. So that's the kind of the outlook we like to share, the FY28 outlook. Now, there will be some years where we will be way above the 25% CAGR and some years where we will be at that number. So time will tell whether we'll be below or above that number. But on a CAGR basis, between FY23 and FY28, we're expecting a 25% CAGR.
Okay, so that helps. And just one more question. So all the acquisitions we do will be fitting our profile margin in terms of PAT, or would that be like maybe a year or so of, you know, maybe getting the efficiencies in, so for it to become, you know, margin accretive? How would that play out? Because we have increased our margin substantially over the last few quarters. So, you know, just wanted to get a color on that, like how our target acquisition
been. Excellent question. So on the you know, again, it has to be specific to that particular acquisition. So what we expect is, you know, for example, the Liberate Learning, we're acquiring a company that's already operating at 35 38% EBITDA margin, and they are in the e-learning vertical. Liberate margins are better than our standalone e-learning business. So yes, we expect to improve margins in our e-learning business, but potentially not in Liberate, but more in the standalone business. We're in fact learning a lot of things from how Liberate does business, and that will unlock, you know, future margins. For example, they have more people, you know, outside the company than inside the company, so they have more contractors than they do have internal personnel. So there's things like that on the operating model that we are learning from them. So on a standalone basis, the e-learning margins will improve. Now, coming to the future acquisitions, it will really be dependent on the acquisition itself. We will not acquire anything that's below 15% EBITDA margin on a standalone basis, that's for sure. And we want to make sure that on the content side, we are north of 40%, on the platform side, we're north of 45%, and on the e-learning side, we're north of 30% at some point. So, you know, if we do acquire something that's less than those numbers, then we will, our goal will be to get them to that level in 6-18 months. As of now, like I said, you know, we do not, we're not expecting any margin erosion as we scale, either organically or inorganically.
So thank you so much, that helps a lot, and all the best. So thank you.
Thank you.
Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phone. The next question is from the line of Mr. Mahesh, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, Rahul. My question is on e-learning. E-learning is roughly 25% of total revenue currently. What is the target number by FY 2027 or FY 2028?
Yeah, I think the target number for us is the total number, which is 1,500 crores. You know, we're not targeting any specific segment-wide split, you know, because it's, you know, it's difficult to project that out over a, over a three-year period. Second, you know, some of them, a lot of our, majority of our growth is acquisition, 60%, and a lot of that is dependent on externality. So for example, the next one that we're envisioning is more in the platform space. So there may be a point in time where the platform business suddenly becomes the second largest segment. So it's difficult to predict what the composition of the business mixes look like. You know, so time will tell, but yes, definitely, running towards the 1,500 crore number I described earlier.
Okay. How would you break the current e-learning practice revenue by practice, actually?
When you say by practice, could you elaborate a little bit on your question? I didn't quite understand.
You know, how would you break your e-learning revenue by practice, I mean, or vertical?
So I think that we can think of our e-learning business both in two ways, by geography, as well as the type of the work that we do. So geography-wise, we have the MPS Interactive entity, which is now marketed as EI Design. That entity is focused on more on the global marketplace, but delivered from India. Our Liberate entity is more focused on the APAC market, delivered from Australia and New Zealand. Our Swiss entity, called MPS Europa, is focused entirely in Europe. And our TopSIM entity is focused more on German-speaking Europe. So there's a geographic split to it. In terms of the type of work that we do, you know, we are fairly comprehensive. We start, you know, from the very, very top, what we call learning consulting. So, you know, that learning advisory and consulting, that's the part of our business that where the entire engagement gets kicked off. Then we have a section on immersive learning, where, you know, the e-learning is more experiential in nature, so gamification, scenario-based learning, video-based learning, story-based simulations, et cetera. As well as, you know, continuous learning, so things like performance support tools, social learning, self-directed learning, content curation, as well as, you know, learning platforms and technology. So we have a series of products like Learning Planet, QuizBiz, CyberTest, XR Optimist, and Learn Now. And then also training, the delivery of training. Here our role is slightly limited because we're more a digital company, but we do support on the training delivery side where, you know, we focus more on, you know, how training is delivered. So it could be mobile learning, micro learning, blended learning, virtual training, and so on.
Okay. Thank you. So last quarter you mentioned, you know, you would look to acquire companies in the MTS space, right? Rather than growing it organically. Could you elaborate what does MTS industry look like, you know, size of companies, margins, etc.?
Yeah, so I think just for everyone's knowledge, MTS stands for Managed Training Solutions or Managed Training Services, which basically entails the outsourcing of a large part of the entire learning and development function. So if you're a corporate, rather than managing all your L&D, you outsource a significant chunk of L&D, possibly all of it. So just for everyone's knowledge, that's what MTS means. And what MTS has been doing, we've slowly been activating what we call onshore / local presence in many markets. So our acquisition of Liberate Learning was to that end. Our presence in Switzerland and Germany is to that end. And the goal, of course, is that, you know, for example, if you're working with a Fortune 1000 global corporate and they're looking to onboard us as a global managed training services provider, we're able to manage the global L&D budget and the global L&D rollout. So we've been slowly and gradually working towards that. I think we've got the APAC market covered. We've got the European market covered. There, of course, we need expansion into the US and other markets when it comes to MTS. In terms of where we are with that, we are in mature conversations with some of our strategic star accounts about unlocking MTS. In terms of margins, yes, the MTS business tends to operate at a lower margin. So, for example, you know, on average, a standalone e-learning business, the margins, the industry margins of a reasonably good company are about 25%. In MTS, it's about 15%. We are not there yet in terms of becoming an MTS company. That's more a longer-term plan. So we don't see any short-term erosion of margins because of MTS. Currently, we're in the phase where we are building the ingredients for an MTS business.
Okay. My last question, how does the merger and acquisition environment look like, especially given the high interest rate environment?
Yeah, I think we've gone through a period where definitely there were more, the market was a bit dry on terms of transactions available. Despite that, MTS has not seen any slowdown because, you know, so our framework is slightly different. We depend less on intermediaries. We actually, because we are so active in the space, we're positioned as thought leaders. We tend to go directly to the owners of companies because we know them. And some very often they approach us as well. In fact, even Liberate Learning, though it came through an investment banker, Rod and his team had given the investment banker directions to come to us. So in terms of, you know, historically, yes, the market was seeing a slowdown. We personally didn't see any slowdown. But going forward, we are seeing a pickup in terms of transaction activity. I'm definitely seeing a lot more investment decks on my desk than I have in the last 12 months. We also are seeing competitors complete acquisitions. We've seen two of our competitors complete acquisitions in totally different spaces in the last couple of months. So definitely seeing more activity in the M&A market on average. But we never did see a slowdown either. So, yes, there is some more opportunity available in the marketplace now than 12 months ago.
I mean,
I don't think interest rates are interfering. your interest rates have not affected the volume, and in terms of you know valuation, we've been very disciplined historically. Even now, you know, when we look at things like 5x and 6x, you know, it makes us very uncomfortable. But we are operating in that world because we're acquiring growing businesses. There could always be a valuation expectation from the seller, but we are highly disciplined. We have a strong track record, and you know, we stay disciplined.
Okay, thank you, Rahul.
Thank you.
We would like to remind the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Arjun Balkrishnan, an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, thanks, Rahul. So I have a couple of questions. So one is, as you grow inorganically doing these acquisitions, I'm a bit concerned about how you're managing them once the acquisition happens. You know, I guess you'll have a number of companies to eventually manage. So are you making some org changes or structural changes to ensure there is no leakage of people or revenue or profitability as you become a larger company but a bunch of smaller companies put together?
Excellent question. I think that going forward, that is the biggest challenge, right? Because historically, if you look at prior to Liberate, so all the acquisitions that we did before Liberate, it was all about acquire and operate and turn around. In ER's case, of course, there was no turnaround, but it was acquire and operate with Asha, who was the promoter of the business, stepping down. So it's always been promoter's exit, you know, and we enter management team stays, but the promoter exits. And now what we're seeing is, you know, promoters want to stick around in Liberate's case for quite a reasonable, you know, sizable period of time. With future acquisitions as well, for example, the platform one that I'm describing, the promoters want to become senior executives in the senior management team of NPS. So I think, you know, what we are making sure is that, you know, we, of course, in the diligence process, we cover things like financial DD, tax DD, legal, etc. But in the DD process, it's almost like, you know, speed dating. So first you spend time, even before you kick off the DD process, to see if, you know, we can actually work together as people. And we have had opportunities that we've walked away from. Even though we like the numbers, we like the business, but we just couldn't see ourselves working with that promoter pool. So there's a first initial analysis of, you know, at a very high level, as people, can we work together? So, and then the second, in the diligence phase,
for the first time, you know, we are actually looking at things like culture, values, and those type of things. And then post-transaction, the setup is very different. I think, rather than acquiring and operating, the focus now is how can I personally, for example, be an advisor, a sounding board to the promoter, help them think through difficult decisions rather than telling them what to do. So Liberate, for example, is an excellent example of achieving that. So Rod and I speak once a week where, you know, I'm helping him think through difficult things. And quite often, actually, with Rod, for example, I open it up as well to him where I am thinking about certain things and he helps me think through certain complexities because owners think differently always. So I am thinking of this as a tremendous opportunity to upgrade the quality of management in the company, you know, because ownership mindset is very different. And I expect that, you know, we will see a significant upgrade in the quality of management at NPS and quality of leadership at NPS through this expansion drive. We are also, you know, making sure that the goals and the expectations with the founders are set up front of what life would look like and what would roles look like prior to, you know, the acquisition getting completed. So we are very tight employment agreements. We in fact also put down on paper a delegation of authority matrix, which tells them upfront this is the level of authority you will have post acquisition. So there's a lot of detailing that is going on, and the goal is to upgrade the quality of management and leadership in the company. Having said that, we of course know of various examples where companies have gone through such expansion. There's an excellent company called PDS, which went through this kind of expansion in the garment space. In fact, there's a Harvard Business School case study on the PDS situation. And what they did was, you know, basically what they identified was that they had a bunch of cowboys who were extremely successful in their individual businesses but were struggling to collaborate. So what they ended up doing was, firstly, they did not consolidate, so they continued to own 70-80% of the business, but they left 20-30% behind, and they created incentives for them to collaborate. So, which is also what we're looking to do through the ESOP plan as well. Whereas the ESOP plan is focused on making sure that everyone is invested in moving the ship and not the boat. So, your excellent question there. There's lots of things happening, but something that is extremely top of mind and something we're paying a lot of attention to.
Okay, thanks, Rahul. And I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, right, this is a huge opportunity to cross-sell and, I mean, improve opportunity size for each of your operating segments. How are we planning to achieve that part of the opportunity?
Yeah, I think what we've identified basically is, you know, we are now servicing, clocking over, you know, 600 customers now. I think someone on the previous earnings call said that, you know, you guys should just switch off from new customer acquisition, just service these current customers. And I thought that was I'm going to switch off from adding new customers. I thought the gentleman was exaggerating the point, to make a point, which was, there's so much opportunity within this captive customer base that we need to work hard towards converting that opportunity into reality. So what we've done is we've rolled out what we call a star account strategy. We've figured out that there's no way that we can have strategic partnerships with each of these 600 customers. So we've identified, you know, last year we identified about 30 customers that we would cross-sell to. We call them the star accounts, and the goal was, today you have on average two or three lines of business with an average customer, double it in the next 2 or 3 years. So that initiative was highly successful. It was part of our going gestalt strategy. And now we've scaled that to a total of 100 customers. So, and we call that the supercharging gestalt. So as of today, you know, we're focusing on, you know, about 100 customers. For some of them, only identifications have happened. For some of them, they're more mature, where they're actually also inform the customer that, hey, you're a star account and this is what it means for you. So there's value to be unlocked on their side as well. So, yes, you know, we're covering roughly 15%, right now. So the goal, of course, is to see how we convert this first and then to scale it. But I think for the next couple of years, we are going to be focusing on these, you know, 100 customers, and these are not just simply,
okay,
when we identified these customers, these are not customers where we just picked the largest. We in fact focus more on where's the potential. In fact, some of our large customers are not in this list because we feel this is tapped out there. So it's not about size, it's about potential when we identify these customers.
Okay, great. And last, I mean, very generic question, yeah, out of curiosity. Though I'm just a recent investor for the last 2 years, I was looking at historical, I mean, con calls and your commentary. I just noticed in the last 1 year or so, you've become a bit more aggressive in terms of commentary. And I know you're still conservative, but then you're more forward-looking and then you set yourself a 4-5 year target. What has changed in the market, Rahul? I mean, since, say, you were in business in 2010 to, say, 2017-18, and I see a big shift in your the way you are trying to sell yourself to the market, as well as, I mean, the general bullishness. What has changed over the last decade or so, if you can answer that?
So two things, right? So one is personal, one is professional.
So personally speaking, I was 31 years old when I became CEO back in 2015. So youngest CEO. So it's obviously been a tremendous personal journey that's taken place. I've evolved as a leader, personally speaking, both in terms of expertise, but also in terms of experience. I've gone through two highly transformational experiences, one at the Wharton School of where I attended the Advanced Management Program back in 2018. And in the middle of a program they call the Owner President Program at Harvard Business School, which gets completed. I graduate from that program next month. So there's been a huge personal leadership journey that I have gone through as a leader, but also there's a significant leadership journey that our management team has gone through. We've seen three evolutions of the current management team. We are in the third evolution. As owners get added, as management depth gets increased, there's also an evolution. So I think what's basically happening is, yes, there's a market piece element to this, but there's also a maturity at a company level, at a management level, my personal leadership, but also my team's evolution. And I think that we are basically communicating what, the business. We're not doing anything extravagant. So all we do are these earnings calls. We do maybe one investor roadshow in the year. So we are very, very conservative in how we communicate to the marketplace. But I think we are getting more organized in our approach, and that, getting ourselves organized is possibly showing in our communication. So I always believe anyone who's, has an ability to think in a structured way is an effective communicator. I think we are getting more effective in our communication because we are moving forward in a structured manner.
Okay, thank you, Rahul. Thank you for all answering all the questions and all the best.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Arjun Goel, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, sir. I had a question on the capital allocation and dividend point. So, assuming that you complete the 50 to 70 crore platform acquisition prospective, do you think there is a scope for another final dividend or a buyback at the end of the year, given the 30 rupees coming in now?
Yes. So, I think my perspective on my goal would be to can't confirm it because we have to go through the acquisition. We have to go through two quarters of earnings. We then need to go to the board. The board has to. So there's a whole process and journey through this. I can just say, what my preference would be. My preference would be that, in May we're sitting in a position where we distribute capital higher than what we are doing right now. But again, that's my preference. I don't know what will end up happening.
Right.
And of course, the only rider on that is, suddenly, if you have an acquisition that's really significant at that point in time, we do not see that right now because, this is the first time we're doing two acquisitions in the same year. So we probably want the system to digest and the management team to digest those two acquisitions before we start pursuing more. So my preference would be, like I said, redistributing capital again higher than what we've done right now.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, I think in FY23, the overall payout was slightly lower than historical, if I'm not mistaken, because in preparation for acquisitions, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct. So we thought we would need more than what we've deployed. And the moment we've understood that we will not need that much, we're going and redistributing. So we had some pent up, and that's why we decided to declare an interim dividend rather than waiting till the other year.
Okay, fair enough, sir. And best of luck for the rest of the year and the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand over the conference to Mr. Rahul Arora for closing comments.
Yes, thank you for your active participation in our earnings call. We appreciate all your thoughtful questions. As I always say, your unique outside-in perspective keeps us, active, helps us learn and improve. I also want to take this opportunity to express my gratitude to each of you through your continued support and respect. Our journey together, you know, has been quite remarkable, and we've seen a tremendous opportunity here to supercharge what we've done over the last couple of years. And finally, look forward to your continued support, feedback, and partnership, mindset. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of MPS Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.